This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome, finally, to another episode of the Sellers Points Podcast. I am, of course, your host, Russell Sellers, back again to talk a little shop with a very special guest. As you guys know, we're still in the process of trying to find a regular co-host for the show, but in the meantime, we're doing this little monthly thing and talking to some more fun folks here at Place to Be Nation Pop and Abroad. And today, I've got a guest who has never been on the place on the Sellers Points Podcast anyway, and he is the chairman, the CEO of Place to Be Nation, our very own Vince McMahon, Mr. Brad Warren. Welcome to the Sellers Points Podcast.
Russell, thanks for having me on. I like that we have talk and pop, but this is talk and shop, so you know, this is a little bit more on the straight and narrow, maybe. We'll see how it goes. So,
oh, there's nothing narrow about this. I'm pretty wide load. But in any case, and nevertheless, that's my own little contribution there. Thank you, Greg. We're going to get right into it because, Brad, you have been on what I like to call a spiritual journey, maybe a spiritual awakening over the last, what, year now?
Yeah, since about August, actually.
Oh, just August of 2017. So, not quite a year. You have become an avid comic book reader, largely thanks to, I don't want to say good influence, I don't want to say bad, I'll just say influence from those of us at the Place to Be Nation Comics crew.
So, yeah, I would certainly list you guys as my main influences, and mainly, you know, how it happened was I saw some tweets from someone else who I respect, who I listen to from the video game side. And so the first person I think to go to is you. And I'm like, hey, you know, is the New Frontier, like, is this a good deal, a good sale? And you're like, hey, you should really listen to that or read that. I mean, so, and so that's kind of where things kind of got started last summer, we were going on vacation and I was looking for different things to do on my phone because Twitter and wrestling Twitter absolutely sucks, and so I was trying to get away from the political climate and everything going on. I'm like, I need some type of release. It's easy for me to be able to consume. You know, it can be harder to sit and watch movies or maybe work my way through like a show. And I also have a young daughter, so it's like, okay, so she's going to sleep, and so I'm in the rocking chair. Like, what can I be doing besides falling asleep and screwing up the rest of my night? And so it was, now we're going to jump back in and to read comics. So that's kind of where it started. It has been I've gone pretty full time with it, you know, since we started, and I've, you know, put some other things by the wayside, which you know, kind of are other priorities at the site, mainly wrestling watching, right? You can't do everything. So I've kind of reprioritized something as to what my main interests are at the time.
I would say that you made probably the better decision, certainly better than, say, watching Rosebud porn.
I would agree. I would say that, you know, I'm not sure if this really in my head was kind of where it went. So the WWE product is one that, from a storytelling standpoint, never really satisfied a lot of us and me in particular, and it kind of, it is what it is. It wasn't something that was really worth the energy to complain about. And then, so I was into New Japan Pro Wrestling last year, and I still am to an extent. And I was really interested in, mainly in kind of Kenny Omega's quest and how they booked him. And I was really hooked into this performer and this storyline. And it kind of coincides with the summer, right? They had the draw and they met in the G1, and it was right around the time when I started reading, and like, they kind of finished their thing, and it was kind of like the perfect segue for me to kind of put that aside,
yeah,
and then go kind of dive into something else.
And you kind of did a deep dive, but you came to the right people over in our Place to Be Nation comics Facebook group, which is something that we encourage everybody to go and join if you're listening to any of our shows. There you will find this long thread that that Brad has started over a year ago now, or about a year ago, talking about all the amazing new comics that he's been getting into, and also taking recommendations from us when those big Comixology sales would be popping up. He'd be like, hey, what should I be getting on this? And the story that you referenced earlier, which was DC's New Frontier, or a Justice League New Frontier story,
yeah,
was written and drawn by Darwin Cook, who we unfortunately lost last year. But he is one of the absolute best comics creators of all time. One of my favorite artists ever. So you picked a hell of a story to get back in on that one. So very, very good choice. And you know, we're extremely happy to have you joining this little niche corner of Place to Be Nation Pop. But one question I wanted to ask you was something that I like to ask all kind of new readers. Was this you getting back into comics, or was this like your first foray into this world?
Yeah, you know, so this was getting back into it, and I had mildly flirted with it back in, I want to say it was maybe 2014, which is where my Comixology account came from. I remember I had gotten like this Guardians of the Galaxy one with probably like some credit that I had, and I thought about getting into it, and you know, was finding things to do at my desk or whatever, you know, and I just put it aside and didn't touch it. And same thing with Marvel Unlimited. I had an account, and Ben had gotten me a trial. Ben Morris, who's no longer with Marvel, so I can probably speak more candidly with that. You know, just a normal, like, very nice little trial to check it out. Didn't do much with it. Put it aside, you know, plenty of other things in life and whatnot to go with. But yeah, but originally, you know, going way back is into and I would really love to hear your thoughts on this time period too. And I know that they're important to you as well. As you know, I go back to, you know, in the late 80s, we certainly had comics around the house. Mm-hmm. And I'm fairly confident that my dad and his brothers were very avid readers in the 70s. And so, you know, we'd have like your grab bags, and we didn't, you know, have a store really near us until I was maybe more like 12 or 13. Didn't particularly have a lot of money, so it was probably like, you know, like here's three or four like G.I. Joe and Spider-Man, like old random crapshoot issues, and I had a bunch of those lying around. And then when X-Men 91, you know, with Jim Lee drawing, when that came out, I had a friend who was really into comics, and he was the one that had kind of turned me on to like Image and Dark Horse and all this stuff, and Valiant. And so so X-Men 91 was really my first jump back into it. And then when the animated X-Men television show came in around, was it 93?
Around that time, around 92, 93 is
when. Yeah, 92, 93. So at that point, you're talking, I'm like 13, 14 years old. So from a nostalgia standpoint, like where you tap into nostalgia, so everything when you were 13 and 14 was the greatest thing ever. So I happened to hit, like, this was the greatest thing ever. So And that really shaped my idea of what I thought the X-Men were. And, you know, I had the Death of Superman, and I had, you know, Nightfall ones. And we went on this big road trip as part of Scouts, and we read Wizard magazine the whole time and had all these comics, man, and all this stuff. So, like, 93 in the summer is, like, peak me with comics. And I would say, like, I kept into it probably, like, the next year or two. But, you know, as I think we'll probably get into, is it was just harder as like a 15-year-old then to kind of keep up with it versus how easy and accessible it is now.
Oh, very, very much agreed. Because back in the day, whenever I was collecting, there was no local comic shop in the town I grew up in. It was the grocery store and like, you know, their magazine section is where they would keep their comics. And
sure,
for a while in like the mid 80s through about the mid 90s, I would think, like close to maybe a little further into that, 97, 98, they had a pretty good selection of comics. Every time my mom was going to the grocery store, I'd be going with her. So I'd be going over to where the comics were and, you know, looking through whatever I could find, whatever looked interesting. I was not really in that frame of mind where I was collecting any one book regularly. It was just, hey, which cover image jumps out at me?
And, right.
And certain books grabbed me more than others. I was a big Spectacular Spider-Man fan. Not amazing, but spectacular. The one that J.M. DeMatteis and Sal Buscema were part of. And that's kind of what cemented my own Spider-Man fandom. And then, of course, in the 90s, right alongside that X-Men animated series, we got Spider-Man the Animated Series, and that was my jam. That informed so much of my own like Spider-Man fandom and knowledge. And I like you, I was in it for a while, but you know, you start getting a little bit older and you kind of start falling out of it because other interests come up and you just, you don't commit the money to it. It's just harder to keep up buying it whenever you're a teenager and one whose attention span is, you know, almost that of a teenager,
right, absolutely. And we had a newsstand too. I remember it was right next to where we get our haircuts. So we would pop in, and I remember my dad taking us up. And one of the big obstacles too was like where to jump in on, right?
Yes.
Oh, great, it's X-Men number 26. And it's like, well, like what about the previous ones? And you know, the internet wasn't around at this time. So you were really – you had Wizard, and then otherwise you were like, okay, well, what's a number one? And then – and at that time, I didn't really understand, like, why are there so many number ones? Why is there only 8 issues in this? Why isn't this 500 issues? And I want to get it on the ground floor so I can just see the whole story. So I think I had the right idea, right? Because you want to be a part of, like, an arc and, like, get the whole storyline arc. But I don't know. I didn't quite understand the industry and how it worked and how it rebooted, you know, and stuff like that back then.
Back in the day, the reboots weren't so much a thing for us growing up because like DC had done it in 86 with Crisis on Infinite Earths, but a lot of their books didn't necessarily renumber like Action Comics and Detective Comics. They kept going. They just kept their same numbering, but their whole like universe essentially started over and was reinvented for a modern era. Marvel has never exactly done the same thing, at least they say they haven't, even though they've kind of done it several times. It's a big convoluted, messy thing, and that's comics for you. Like it's a convoluted, messy thing, and that kind of brings me to an important question. It was as you were getting back into it this time, did you find it intimidating, or were you finding it easy to get back into it?
Yeah, I found it easier than I thought it would be, and I think that, you know, the digital services that are out there and the trades and whatnot make it easy to get back in. And I think also, you know, and I am quite confident that there is a – so all right. So let's say like you're, you know, I mean, I guess Batman is what, like twice a month some of their ones are. So yeah. It's not like, you know, you're watching like 8 hours of wrestling. It's like, oh, man, if I don't keep up with this, you know. So you can – and you can also kind of read it in a vacuum where I guess because it wasn't tapped into like – oh my gosh, this is what happened in Superman this month. Like, you can kind of read it at your own pace and kind of dive back in where you want. And I'm sure there are like current events and people talking about like where the stories are going or, you know, maybe more the business behind it. But I really didn't have that. And essentially, I was just cherry picking, which is what I'm excellent at when it comes to any hobby, video games, wrestling. I mean, you can ask Chad, you know, I just cherry picked off of him, you know, a lot in the beginning. And so, So that's what I did with that is, you know, you just found good sales. And then, you know, and if I was playing around on Marvel Unlimited, I could start wherever. And they do a pretty good job at organizing, or you can just pick up to the next issue and there it is. And you can, when you want to stop, you can stop. So it's easy to jump in. It's easy to play around and be like, yeah, I want to. All right, I want to check something out from Black Panther. Yeah. You know, Greg and Nick are talking about them this month a lot. So, like, oh, I'm going to start this. And it's so easy to do. And I think that really helped hook me into it also.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm also a wrestling fan. A lot of people might not know that listening to my show. But I find it that wrestling and comics have a lot in common. And that, say, for example, NXT. Which is currently my absolute favorite wrestling program. And when I started watching it, I kind of came in the middle. I haven't been watching NXT since it started. I haven't even gone back to watch a lot of the older stuff that definitely is on the network. I picked up into it probably 2015, late 2015, early 2016. I came in the middle of a whole bunch of craziness that I didn't understand who any of these people were or what was going on. But I just kind of ran with it. And before I knew it, new people were circulating in and old people were being certain other people were being called up to the main roster. But I just kept going and suddenly I find myself, you know, starting what could essentially be called brand new story arcs. New characters being introduced, new ideas being put forward. And it became an addicting thing. And suddenly I found myself like identifying with a lot of these new characters and just getting like really deep into it. But I think what cemented my fandom was actually going to one of the shows. First time I went to an NXT show, I was like, it was on a WrestleMania weekend. I want to say it was 32. Maybe.
I don't
remember if we went to 30s, the NXT match at WrestleMania 30. But I know we went to the one for 32 because that was in Dallas and it was the debut of Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah. They didn't have one in 30. 32 was, I think, the first Mania one. Did they do one in 31? I can't remember now. But that's a great.
That was a great
experience.
That was my first NXT show. Watched him and Sami Zayn go at it, and what a tremendous show that was! And I've been a fan ever since. And I was also, but the one that really hit for me though was the one in Orlando, WrestleMania 33, which was the debut of Aleister Black.
Yes.
When he came on, man, my fandom was cemented immediately. Loved his entrance, and then he like put on this killer performance in the ring. I was like, "Holy shit, this is my dude!" And he's only gotten better since. The Dutch Destroyer is my guy. But I look at comics the same way. I'm like, you just have to find something that looks interesting. Something that gets your attention and you just dive in and give it a shot. And you did it the right way because you found all these great sales on Comixology where you're not spending a whole lot of money, but you're also like subscribed to Marvel Unlimited, which might be the single greatest like investment that any comics fan or anybody who's comics curious could make. If you got a tablet and you want to spend and you've got $69 to spend in a year.
Right.
You have access to this huge.
And I think it's 60 or they run sales or whatever where it can be 60. Yeah, so you're talking, you know, $5 a month.
Yeah, if that for access to an enormous and ever growing library of Marvel comics. So that is one of the absolute best investments I think that you have ever made, and that you've done it this way is like, this is the smartest possible way. I think that you've provided kind of a template for people who have been Laps fans, but also for people who might be getting into it for the very first time. So
sure. Well, thank you. And I think that it's, you know, and Marvel is so vast too, right? You know, like let's say like you just like Star Wars, you can get your $5 worth in just Star Wars. on there. You know, right? You know, you talk about miniseries, and they run a ton of arcs that are maybe like 8 to 12 episodes or issues, and you know and it's all canon, right? And people dig that. That's like the most important thing with it, because I'm, you know, a little bit more into Star Wars than I was a year ago before due to some different gaming and things that I do. So those are really cool. But one quick point I want to jump back is that I really like that point you made around NXT, and I think that's because, you know, first off, we always like characters we can relate to, but I think that they're also pretty smart about cycling. And so when you think about comparing a 12-issue run versus a 9-month run where they cycle through like a champion and he has his rematches and they build these stories and then they cycle through like and everybody kind of stays fresh, is almost kind of like a Netflix model too, right? Where it's like, okay, we put our show up, we put up, and it's 10 episodes and here it is, right? And I think that that is something that they wanted to do and they can take advantage with the WWE Network, which is so different than the slog of 5 hours of TV a week, you know, and having to keep up with that and tell stories, which is hard to do, right? Because ultimately we want the stories. I mean, that's why I read comics, is that, you know, the wrestling stories didn't really do it for me, but, you know, that's why I can do star ratings, as funny as that sounds, because essentially you know what you like, but you know how to grade on, you know, how this story connected with me, how it was told, how it was drawn, how it was portrayed, you know, and like I said, how you connected to it. And I think that goes across any type of art and anything, any content that you consume, TV, movies, whatever. So you just kind of apply that template over to comics. And I'm sure, and look, I've read your Twitter feeds, and I think you're a fantastic advocate and fan of comics, because I know that you're, you know, one to shut down. There are a lot of stupid people in the world across all hobbies, you know, and chronic complainers, and it's like, and those people just are awful. And, you know, you're pretty good about staying above that. You're very good at it, you know, and looking at the positives and not ignoring the negatives. Yeah, it wasn't great. And then you move on, you know, and I think that's a good way to go about life. It's something that I do myself.
And I try to tell people that, and this is another thing that wrestling and comics have in common. In wrestling, unfortunately, our favorite wrestlers will age out. They'll get too old to keep doing it, or they'll get hurt, or something will happen, and they'll move on. Maybe they get fired. Even it's a thing that happened. And fortunately for us, in comics fandom, like your characters like Superman, Batman, Wolverine, Spider-Man, you know, the big ones, Wonder Woman as well. Like, these are characters who are ageless and timeless. They will always be around. So you can always jump into their stories. And I think some people find it intimidating for that fact, because they say that, oh, well, I don't know what happened to this character before this, so I feel like I need to go all the way back. And I say, well, no, you don't. Think of it, and if you're thinking of it in terms of wrestling and people like being in the business for a little while, making their mark and moving on, I tell people, don't so much follow characters, find writers and artists that you like and follow them. Because if you follow their career, they're not always going to be writing necessarily your favorite character, but I guarantee you, whatever they go to next, if you liked what they did with one, you'll probably like what they did with another.
Yeah,
and that's a way of always making sure that you're going to be more likely to enjoy the comics that you're reading, even if it's not necessarily a character that you love. Like me, for example, I wouldn't say that I'm the biggest fan of Jack Kirby's Fourth World characters. I know, oh, shocker, blasphemy even. I like those characters used in certain contexts, but anytime I've sat down to read Jack Kirby's actual stuff, I find it to be more than a little heady and a little tedious. It's just not my type of comic. But I've been an advocate and a fan of Tom King since before he took over Batman, since before he was kind of a name in comics. There was a time I read his he did a Green Lantern one-shot for the Dark Side War, and after I read that, I was convinced that what I might have read came from the guy who's the next Geoff Johns. And I've pretty much been reading everything he writes since. And it was when he with his usual cohort, Mitch Gerads, launched this Mr. Miracle 12-issue maxi series that I decided, okay, well, I'm going to give this Jack Kirby character that I've never been like a huge fan of another shot and see if he connects with me in a way that Mr. Miracle just never has before. And I'll be damned if this isn't one of my favorite comics of the year.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, that's really, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because, and we didn't script that part of it, but I was saying to myself, I was going to talk to you about it tonight, you know, I think I'm going to write down who wrote, like I was going to create like a spreadsheet, like I needed to go back because it's easily organized on Comixology and then yes. I can go through MU, you know, and see what I did and just jot it down. I mean, I know the big names and I cherry pick those too. But I started to see that too. Like, you should try to pick out some trends and see, because that's kind of how I wanted to follow it. Because I think that's a great analogy to wrestling. It's not as much as, oh, here's another Stone Cold story. It's who's telling the Stone Cold story and, like, whose story are they going to tell next? Which works with wrestling in the sense of, you know, if you enjoy, you know, a creative period or someone who's booking, you know, if you're a Memphis fan from the 80s, you know, or you enjoy, you know, Jim Crockett Promotions and you're, you know, there's somebody there where you really like that style and you're like, oh, I really like that. And so that's a type of wrestling that you're attracted to. Same type of thing with comics and who those writers are and how they craft stories.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then they get to pick their illustrator. Right. And their stenciler. Why not? And I think it goes somewhere, too. I mean, I've said before, and this probably isn't entirely fair. And it's kind of like, wow, what a cheap shot from someone who's A, not an artist. But like, you know, I think DC stuff is great. And sometimes I think like current Marvel stuff is like what I call like popcorn comics. Like some of the Star Wars stuff is like 19 pages of like really mediocre drawing. It's not meant to be that good. I mean, look, I'm not saying everybody has to be Jim Lee, but like you read it and you're like, eh, like I would never buy that. Like I'm happy to read it through my subscription, but like it just isn't the art and that's the style of it. But so that's still important, you know, just like maybe the work rate would be or the some other facet of the wrestling you know that would tie into it. So
that's actually a really great point about why something like Marvel Unlimited is such a great investment, because you're like you're saying, you don't necessarily want to spend the money on like a trade or even buying single issues of this stuff, but if you've got, you know, all those issues right at your fingertips and you're like, oh, well, you know, I'm glad I read it, but I'm glad I didn't spend the extra money to own it. I think that's one of the best arguments in the world to make for being a subscriber to Marvel Unlimited and why DC should make their own version of it.
And I'm sure that DC wants to, and I'm sure there's some legal tie-ups with credits and artistic things. And, you know, that's tough, right?
I wonder sure sometimes. You, yeah. I wonder if they really want to do it, or if they're like so worried that it's something that they don't necessarily think Marvel's making money off of. But as much as we advocate for it, and as much as all of us use it, I think that it's a thing that's catching on. And I think DC is just kind of behind the curve on this one. Whoever their bean counters are that are not pushing that forward as an initiative, basically the people at the top of the ladder. I feel like they're just leaving money on the table, and you know, because I would be subscribed immediately.
Sure. And I wonder if now, and so now we're going to talk about, let's talk business models that I don't necessarily know a lot about, but we'll just speculate through. So one thing I was curious about is how Comixology has their own sub service, which includes Marvel Unlimited. So they must be paying Marvel like a lot of money to be able to.
It's a weird thing.
Is it everything? It's weird, right?
It's not everything. It's select Marvel stuff that they get. Like Marvel is participating with the Comixology Unlimited subscription service, but only to an extent. And their stuff, it's more like Netflix. Like things will be up there for a little while, but then they'll fall off.
And so the ultimate repository is still, and as you would expect, and I did too, that's still Marvel Unlimited, but it's kind of like a Netflix. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, Comixology Unlimited is far more Netflix-like than just a giant archive, which is what Marvel Unlimited is.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And there. I mean, you're getting access to more stuff. Like, there's a lot of Image stuff that's on.
Yeah, and like The Walking Dead and stuff. I think the Comixology, I think they're doing a great thing with kind of, you know, it's almost like, now let me relate it to like a High Spots network in wrestling, where, hey, look at all these indies that we stream their stuff. You know, so like Comixology says, hey, you want these digitally? Like, sign up to our service and you can, you know.
Yeah, like it is a pretty good deal if you're going to read a lot of comics, but you don't necessarily have like a comic store nearby, or you just don't like going, or maybe, you know, you're one of those that's like, I can't have a bunch of print comics in my house. They take up a lot of room, and I can attest to that. They do. It's to the point now where even I am like, maybe I should start transitioning out of this and start getting rid of some of these paper copies and going digital.
Well, if you want to segue and talk about paper copies, I can't say that I'm immune to that too. So you can't hold me up as a beacon of, and I'm also not a, I could never be a total digital advocate, because I have walls of retro video games that I am trying to parse down. Cause as we get older, Russell, we realize you really don't need this stuff, right? Yeah. Or it becomes archived in a perfect form digitally, and then you really don't need this stuff.
Yeah,
you know, but it comes down to needing a license or whatnot, and that kind of sits weird with me too. Or having to maintain a subscription, so I don't totally own it. Even if I did own it digitally, there's still always kind of those wrinkles with who really owns the content.
It's true, and that is one thing that I've thought about over the years. Like, there's so many of these comics that I've collected, and I was wondering, like, at one point, I had to ask the hard question of, who am I doing this for? Am I doing it, you know, strictly for me and for my own enjoyment? Because if so, I can totally go digital collections and probably feel a little less cluttered, you know, and feel happier about that. But if, and at, as some of my listeners know, and as certainly all my close friends know, I've been doing this trade paperback project for the last several years now, which I call the DC Post-Crisis Project.
Okay.
Where I am building a fairly close to comprehensive history of DC Comics from Crisis on Infinite Earths to Flashpoint. So from 1986 to 2011. The history of the DCU from its mid-80s beginning to its mid sort of 2000s, mid-aughts ending. And DC has been great lately about reprinting all of that, reprinting several great stories from that era in like full collections.
Yeah,
like Mark Waid's Flash is finally being collected. I went gaga for that whenever it started. I was losing my mind that Mark Waid's Flash is finally being collected fully.
I'm happy for you, even though I don't know who he is. So
Mark Waid is one of the most prolific comic writers of our era. He's responsible for so many great stories. He's currently a big Marvel guy. He's had a long tenure on Daredevil, which was an instant classic. He wrote one of my favorite Superman stories called Superman Birthright. He had a long run on The Flash, which is a seminal run. It's actually considered one of the all-time great Flash runs, and it went for a long time.
Okay.
And he also had a classic Justice League story called Tower of Babel, in which he truly introduced the idea of Batman's paranoia to the point where Batman had come up with contingency plans to take out every member of the Justice League in case it ever needed to happen. And that plan, or those plans, were stolen by Ra's al Ghul and implemented.
This is digitally, it's already collected?
Yes, this has been collected and recollected recently, actually, in a nice new paperback. So I believe it's the 8th volume of that JLA run.
Okay.
Because Mark Waid took over for Grant Morrison after Grant had relaunched JLA in the 90s. And it was the Grant Morrison run was a classic too. So it was like one hit right after another with Justice League for quite a while. And Mark Waid also happens to be from Alabama. So that's another reason for my my deep fandom and appreciation for all things Wade. So
gotcha.
He's another guy that I would highly recommend you check out.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to do that. So tell me about this project. So you're kind of getting rid of singles and buying trades as they become available, but essentially trying to have like almost a complete physical history of.
Well, the physical history was when I started getting back into comics, thanks largely to our mutual friend and one half of the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Mr. Greg Phillips. I had gotten back into comics while I was in college, starting with J. Michael Straczynski's Amazing Spider-Man run, because favorite character, a writer that I really liked, and a book that was getting a lot of buzz, and luckily for me, Marvel was collecting them in trades. So I wasn't buying single issues. I was just buying trades. So I got all those collections. I was reading all of that. And when I met Greg, he was more of a DC guy. He had a trade. He had two hardback collections of Batman Hush and a hardback copy of Green Lantern Rebirth.
Oh, well, that's pretty good stuff.
Yes, it was. Along with Jeff Loeb and Ed McGuinness's Superman Batman Public Enemies. So I was never like I was only like moderately a fan of DC stuff at that point. Like I was a big fan of Batman the Animated Series and you know the stuff that came along with that.
Sure.
And who doesn't love Batman? But I wasn't too big into DC at that point, but Greg lent me all of these collections, and I just devoured them. I did not expect to love them the way I did, and Green Lantern Rebirth was the one I just kept coming back to. This Jeff Johns guy, I was like, he's something. He's got my attention, and next thing I know, I'm immersing myself in DC lore, going back, finding as many trade collections of DC comic stuff as I can get my hands on, you know, from Crisis, like post 86 stuff, because that's what I was mostly interested in. And somewhere along the line, I got it in my head that I had become more of a DC guy than a Marvel guy. I was like, I couldn't believe it. The transition had happened. And that's how that was the genesis of this project. I wanted to build this collection because I also had it in my head that, you know, one day I might like to pass this on to someone.
Sure. Absolutely. I think that's more than fair. Yeah.
Of course, that part, the trade collection is easier to build than the other part.
It is.
But in any case, I still kind of had that in my head. Like, you know, one day I still have that. You know, fantasy is ludicrous or outrageous as it may be. But as far as my single issues go, I never collected any of this stuff really in single issues. I didn't really start my single issue collecting until right before the Green Lantern event Blackest Night was going to start.
Okay.
So that was...
What year was that again?
That would have been late, like mid 09.
Okay,
Like middle of 2009. And from then on, I have been collecting single issues. So I've been at it regularly for about 9 years now. 9 years. And, it's grown beyond, my capacity to contain at times. And I've actually given away a lot of comics. I've sold some off as well. Just trying to keep it from overtaking an entire room of my house, though it's my comics do have their own room because they need it.
That's okay. My stuff has its own room too. So yeah. Now let me ask you real quick. So how is the resale value? Because I want to clarify in the sense of like, let's say like you have like an entire run, right? Yeah. This guy did this, so here's like the 14 issues. Because I think the example I brought up to you before is, you know. You know, I have everything in metal.
Yes.
And so my idea was, and I think you kind of talked me into this, was, you know, when the trade comes out, you either wait for the trade or then you sell the individuals and then you get the trade if you want to keep it, or you know, you put it towards whatever the next one is. So I have a local comic store that I'm very fond of, that I am there weekly of, and we do a lot of gaming there. Okay. And I want to see it succeed. I work to help it. So I went in one time, and you had sent the checklist. This is actually all your fault. This part is the other stuff kind of goes between Greg and Nick a little bit with your shows. And then, but this is your fault. So then I go in and I'm like, oh, here's the two preludes to Metal. And the first issue was out, and I picked them up, and I grabbed some backs. I haven't read them yet because I just haven't had the time to physically sit and do it. And it's a terrible excuse, but it really made me think, like, I do not need to get a box and collect these physically because this isn't going to work. But now I want to do the whole run. And I haven't really followed that advice all the way. But so I went in there and I started doing that. And so my whole idea was like, you know, so my ultimate question is, so is there anything out there with eBay wise where you're getting at least like maybe half back of, you know, what you first put in?
It's tough to say on Metal. I think it's all going to depend on how it ends and how it plays with larger fandom, and like if there are any major characters that get introduced or killed off in the process.
Okay.
It's all a crapshoot, and this is what I tell people. If you're going to get into comics and you think that you're getting into this because you're going to be able to retire on these books,
no, yeah.
Stop now. Turn back. You have made a mistake.
Having been very, very heavy into the retro video game scene, I've passed that. Yep. That same type of advice on
you. Don't get into the speculator market. It's a fool's game. What you got to do, what you absolutely have to do with comics, is if you're going to get into it because you love it.
Get into it
because you love these characters and you love these stories. Get into it to read those books. They're made to be read.
Right. Absolutely.
That's what I do. And if I'm lucky, I'll wind up with a couple of books that wind up being like, you know, really valuable later on down the road. But that's it's a total crapshoot, and it's not something that I consider to be something that I'm absolutely adamant about. The only thing that I'm truly adamant about right now is a collection that I have finally gotten every issue of.
Okay.
And that is Scott Snyder's Batman run.
Oh, okay. I'm a fan of that. I've read portions of it, volumes of it.
Yep. Because he started writing Batman prior to the New 52 launch. He actually had taken over Detective Comics before the Flashpoint event and before they relaunched. I now have every issue of his Detective Comics run, so I have the very first issue of Batman he ever wrote. And I have that onward through Metal. Everything.
Okay, wow.
Every single issue. And I have two copies of, well, technically three copies of Batman number one from the New 52, one of them signed by him. So.
Very nice.
I am very much collecting as I'm collecting this whole thing. I want his entire run. Everything he's doing on Batman, everything he's going to do on Justice League that's coming up. I am building a grand Scott Snyder collection that I will ultimately sell as one giant thing.
Yeah, and I think that that's going to that's going to appeal more to someone with maybe a little bit more money. That's like, I want to get this all in one shot. You know, I mean that you know, just makes a lot of sense. I was just curious, not to derail you too much with that. I mean, we're just talking shop here, guys.
Yeah, exactly that. We talking shop. We've got a sort of format sheet that I'm following, but Brad is actually answering most of these questions as I go along. I did not know that you had gone to a local comic shop, but what would you say the percentage split is between the print and digital comics that you're getting? Like, is it more digital, more print? Is it about even?
Well, so I only purchase older trades right now. I'm not not that I'm opposed to changing that. I think I'm going to take a look at how I, you know, one thing that I've been really happy with my digital purchases, look, like I have a lot of video games. It's not bragging, and then even digitally I do, right? Like I have a lot of PlayStation digital games on my PS4 that I will never play. And in hindsight, they were a waste of money. But, and I mean this sincerely, but when I look at my Comixology, I mean, yeah, sometimes you can get banged with like a big sale and it's like, wow, it's a lot of books. But I've actually read a lot of what I've bought. And so like even when I went back this year and was like, you know what, I'm going to read that first Guardians one. You know, I don't delete them, but like I actually read the ones I'm buying, which is a nice feeling to have because it's easy to just buy and let it sit, right? But yes. Like consuming is where you get like the reward out of it. So, well, video games, I'll never put the hours into that. It was a waste of money. I have regrets. I'm actually, you know, reading the digital, so I feel good with it. So physical, I've done Metal. I've done Doomsday. I really liked the first time that Batman and Turtles. I thought the digital trade was like fun, 3-star, like this is enjoyable and made me smile from, you know, and so like I started buying that one too. And really, you know, I like to support local business big time. I do a lot of studying of that when it comes to just even like tabletop gaming stores and comic stores and how to make this work in this digital world. And I think it's an apropos right now too with Toys R Us closing down. And so like I feel like I want that, because you want that experience to be there for future generations too.
Yes.
And so I like to support that. And so I do have, like I say, so I would say that I buy newer stuff physically because the idea is that I will eventually read it and then probably sell it because I don't want to have that like library in it. I'm not looking to hold on to it to do anything with it. So, I mean, that could change. Like I said, my tipping point is, like, do I really need to buy one of those cardboard boxes to store them in? I don't want to get there. Right now, they're on a shelf. If we get there, then I know I'm in trouble. So,
the short box will be your life.
The short box.
The short box will happen one day. Oh, just wait till you have, like, 5 or 6 long boxes filled up in your house. Then come talk to me.
My buddy had it when we were 12 and 13 years old. I mean, he had everything. It's always nice to have that friend that has everything. Like I had nothing, but they had everything, you know? So like, and then as an adult, you're like, oh, I want everything. But with this, I've held off and even buying, even buying trades, I haven't physically bought any of them. I'd much rather have them digitally. Cause to your point is that I just want to read them. Like, what am I doing it for? I'm doing it for myself. You know, I'm doing it for, you know, telling stories. And instead of watching TV shows, you know, I'm reading arcs like that and it's good stuff.
Yeah, we've got a good bit more to talk about, but I think right here we're going to give the folks a little break, and we're going to let the promotional consideration be paid for by what you're about to hear, and you know, plug the other podcasts here at the site. And when we get back on the other side of the break, we're going to talk a good bit more. So we're going to get a little bit more in depth and talk about some of Brad's favorite stories that he's gotten into over the last couple of years. And maybe even go further back than that. Talk about some stuff that you was reading back in the day, back when you was pulling off the spinner racks. So,
nice.
So you guys stay right there and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com. And we offer those to you on 3 great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, to Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Everyone to the Sellers Points podcast. We're here talking a little shop with the chairman, the CEO, Mr. Brad Warren, again. And as where we left off was we were just talking about the comics that were kind of made us. I kind of made us comics fans, I guess. And I kind of like to pick up right there if you're feeling it, Brad.
Sure.
Do you remember the first comic that you ever bought, or the first comic you ever owned, and what you liked about it?
Yeah, I remember that, you know, going back to that X-Men number one with the new series in 1991 and all the variant covers.
Oh, yeah.
That they had for it. And so I remember, I'm trying to remember which one I had. And man, I wish I still had it. I have no idea what my mom did with that stuff then. And not that she was, I mean, my dad would pretty much, not hoard, but I wouldn't say collect, but kind of hold on to. I have no idea where that stuff went, but it was definitely one of those, that number one. And I liked it because really it shaped my idea of what the X-Men was. You know, and I maybe seen some old Uncanny and I knew the characters and I saw like a really bad Nintendo game, and it certainly interested me. And I was invested also too with, this is kind of a weird feeling, and I'm curious if, I don't want to offshoot it too much if you've ever had this before where, well, and I think you have, and I'll make an analogy for you, is where you're kind of like invested in hoping that Marvel does well or like the X-Men do well. So like when the movie came out, it was like, I really hope this does well because I want other people to enjoy this. I remember kind of feeling the same way about the WWF in 1998, like getting like recognition of being like a cool company with good stories and wrestling's cool. So it's like, oh, X-Men's cool. Like, this is neat that it got this afternoon, you know, TV show, or well, Saturday morning TV show, I should say. And I remember you and I read that long-form story that kind of talked about all the obstacles they had to even make that show and what a gamble it was.
Yeah.
And it felt good, you know, to see that out there. And like, wow, look at this. Like, isn't this cool? You know, like, you know, when in the past maybe it was looked down upon. So, yeah, I definitely think that was one. And then kind of just following the major stories of that year, like Batman dying and coming back. And I remember having like those wrapped ones. We never unwrapped them, which is a really silly idea because we learned about supply and demand pretty quick. You know, like these are worth nothing, you know. So I bet you never read that story. So I think I may want to – that may be on my list for 2018.
Well, yeah, I actually do remember the comic you're talking about too. I have a copy of it that is autographed by the writer, Chris Claremont. And actually has a certificate of authenticity with it too.
Oh, nice.
Guess how much that book's worth?
$8. Eight autographed, $12.
You're over.
I'm over. It was Chris's autograph isn't holding up much.
No, Chris's autograph was actually worth a good bit if you got it on some of his 70s X-Men stuff.
Right.
Back in the day he was working on X-Men with John Byrne.
Right.
But if you're talking about that 1991 X-Men relaunch, that was the book that really kind of killed the speculator market. Because
right, just along the same times as baseball cards kind of going out too.
Marvel printed so many copies of that book.
Yeah.
And that to this day, the comic shop that I go to, he still has a ton of them left over.
Wow.
That have never been read.
Wow.
Never been touched by human hands. They're just sitting in the back, like sitting in storage.
They sold a lot too, right? Or were those numbers kind of inflated based on how many they sent out to stores?
That's how comic sales are actually calculated, by how many the stores buy, not how many the stores sell. And it's a shit way of inflating the numbers or conflating them in a way that makes it look like their books are more successful than they actually are, because just because a store buys a whole bunch of these books doesn't mean they're going to sell all of them. And generally speaking, they don't. I mean, if you walk into a store.
Sometimes they're mandated to buy so many to be able to get.
Yeah, incentives and stuff like that.
Incentives and whatnot, yeah.
Don't even get me started on that shady practice. But that's something that I've been very critical of Marvel about over the years, and especially in recent years, because they are just the dirt worst at doing that. But DC.
I've seen that firsthand myself with our local store. I'm very close with the owner and some of the staff with that, so I can talk shop. That's like the fourth time I said that. Like, you know, with them, like a little bit, you know, from a business standpoint, and you know, things you read and kind of seeing how it affects people.
Yeah, it's hurting the shops by doing that, because of course you want this stuff, because you got collectors who are coming through the shops all the time who are looking for that, and they will spend money. They will drop. I know there are people who come to the comic shop that I go to who are big time collectors. They are looking for the rarest of the rare stuff, and if you got it, they will slap that money down in cash.
Wow, yeah.
It's crazy. I've seen the giant wads of cash come out of somebody's pocket, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe you're walking around with that and that you're going to drop it on this, but they will do it. So it's, you know, the shops feel like they got to carry this stuff.
Yeah.
It's just the incentives are so expensive. It's just too much for certain shops to keep up with. And especially if you're talking about a smaller shop that doesn't bring in a ton of revenue in the first place. So they're kind of in dire straits trying to keep up with all this, because even though they're getting the books, you know, at a much cheaper rate than what the cover price is, it's tough for them to turn a profit if they have to buy that much just to get those few little incentives that may or may not sell. So it's a practice that I don't condone. I don't think that it's right, but that's neither here nor there in this, because we're talking the fun part of comics. So you've read a good bit. You even finished up reading some stuff just today, just a couple of hours maybe before we started recording. So with all of this stuff kind of fresh in your mind, I got to ask, what has been your favorite story since you got back in?
Yeah, well, so I talked a little bit about cherry picking, right? Mm-hmm. So you kind of have the cream of the crop. And I like Batman, so I hit like all the high spots with Batman. And New Frontier was one where I thought the first part was good, but I thought the second half was like really, really good. And because I hadn't read comics in a while, I had to kind of draw back and be like, oh, I see how that was connected here. And I kind of had to kind of train myself into like reading and thinking forward and you know, I guess kind of, I don't want to say like tricks of writing or more like tropes of comic book writing, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, seeing how things tie together, foreshadowing, your basic literary stuff. But when you don't do that very often, you know, so here we are. And so I thought that was pretty good story. I liked that a lot when I tied it all into. But ultimately, I really thought that Green Lantern Rebirth was the best story that I read last year. And it's still it still is the best that I've read since I jumped back into it. And, you know, that's a Jeff Johns, and he does, and I would say that my thing, because I'm coming at it from a different angle, is how can you get me invested in the story with not knowing the backstory, but not starting from the beginning and not insulting my intelligence and still making me work a little bit for it? So that's rewarding, right? When you read that and you're like, okay, what's going on here? And then you start to get it. And you're like, oh, this is good. Oh, you know. And so it's kind of rewarding kind of all levels of readers. And I think that shows like you're really good at your craft when you can do that. And so he really did that with Green Lantern Rebirth, I felt, in a terrific Hal Jordan story, and one that I was a little bit surprised. Not that, even obviously, I had a great rep. And you had recommended it very, very strongly, and I like it more than, you know, Hush and other ones that are well revered too.
Well, you preaching to the choir on that one.
I know.
I am. You know that I'm a huge Green Lantern fanboy, and I'm glad that you gave that a shot because there are a lot of people that when they ask me like what was my favorite comics run ever, and now that I've had a long time to have read, you know, several different comics runs, and I'm even reading some older classics now, I keep coming back to that Jeff Johns Green Lantern run, and I'm like, you know what? For consistency's sake, and for like the most emotionally deep and like with the greatest payoff ending of any comics run I've ever read, Jeff Johns' Green Lantern is it.
It is really
beginning to end. It is one of the best comics run for my money.
And I'm not a huge Green Lantern guy, and I joked about it a lot coming into kind of some of my not standards isn't the right words, but things that I look for in superheroes or comics that I'm interested in is not really like the magic stuff, right?
Sure.
So like Zatanna and that kind of stuff. Like, so when that stuff takes place in space, like whatever, you know, like they can hand wave a story to do whatever because it's this magic thing. You know, even Doctor Strange, like really, like that movie, like I didn't even finish the movie because I was like, this is whatever. But so Green Lantern was, and look, it's not the very bad movie's fault, right? Because I knew him growing up a little bit, but then you watch the movie and you're like, well, this is kind of like weird. Like, what are these yellow lanterns doing and stuff? But yes, it really took reading that book to be like, no, this is like, well, they really do a good job of explaining this willpower and why this is like this. And, like, mm-hmm. No, this isn't, like, you know, this isn't, I mean, corny's not the right word, but I mean, like, sometimes we're, you know, I'm buying in more. Okay, you've got me. I'm going to buy into this now. Whereas before, I was not buying into it.
It's a testament to Jeff Johns because I'm kind of with you there that before he came along and gave us Rebirth, I looked at the Green Lantern concept and just the idea of it as being, yes, like you said, corny. And
right, yeah.
And go back and read some of that older stuff. It kind of is. There's some good stuff in there. There are certainly good Green Lantern runs prior to Jeff Johns, but the concepts and the way they're presented, it comes off as almost pure silver and bronze age cheese. And
cheese is the better word.
Cheese.
I don't like to use corny. That can be insulting, and I don't mean it to be. Cheese is a good word.
It is
a lot of cheddar.
Oh yeah, it's very. Sometimes you like cheddar. Sometimes cheese is good. But
yeah.
But for the most part, it's not going to be something you want all the time. But then Jeff Johns comes along and says, "You know what? This needs some meat and potatoes." And
yeah.
And he injected that in a big way. He injected his meat into Green Lantern, and he took concepts that were inherently like cheesy and funny and made them into something that was like kind of like easy to take seriously, like the idea of the emotional spectrum, the thought that Parallax was not an alternate identity for Hal Jordan, or just a name that he took on, but an actual living entity of fear. That was a Jeff Johns idea.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That was never presented in the comics before that. So reading that the first time, that was mind-blowing.
Yeah.
That was like, wow, you just took a terrible thing that happened in comics that drove a lot of Green Lantern fans away and made it into something that – feels like it should have always been part of the mythos. It's brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. So yeah, that you're right. That's a testament to a strong writer that he can take those concepts that were just pure silliness and make them into something that you actually can't imagine this story being without.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, it's I just got his Avengers run. I'll tip the cap to Todd there for giving me the heads up on that one too. And you know,
I will be very curious to hear your thoughts on that one because, like certain other writers, Jeff Johns didn't really hit his stride until he got with the right company, and Marvel was never a really good fit for him. He did some stuff with them, but it didn't he didn't break out. There was no big moment, Marvel moment for him.
It
wasn't until he got to DC that suddenly he's hitting a stride. He's getting his creative peak going. But you know, truth be told, I'd be kind of curious what he'd be like at Marvel today. What would he do with Marvel characters if he suddenly had his chance at it, you know, all these 15, 20 years later, after all this crazy amount of comics that he's written? And hell, if Brian Bendis, a guy who's been a Marvel stalwart for almost two decades, can make the jump from Marvel to being a DC exclusive, hell, could Jeff Johns make the jump to Marvel? Could that be a thing that happens? I mean, I don't see it because he'd have to take a pay cut because he's the president of DC Comics.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. They're a pretty conservative and company when it comes to resources. I'm not sure that they would need to do that or would want to do that.
No, I can't see him actually wanting to do it. He's got too good a gig at DC. That's just crazy pipe dream, but I would genuinely be curious what he would do if given Marvel characters. Now, that kind of brings us to the flip side of what we were just talking about. You're talking about the comics that you loved. What comics that you've read recently that you got into didn't hit for you? What wasn't working for Brad?
Well, we'll go two different routes. One is a lot of the current X-Men stuff.
Yeah.
You and I kind of had a little joke about it, Inhumans versus X-Men. I just tapped out after eight pages. I'm like, this sucks.
Yep.
And you're like, you know, sometimes you know, right?
Yeah.
And you guys at least tip your cap to me to be you know, he at least understands the path of he can recognize what's good and bad, or at least where my shortcomings are. I like to think I can, you know, do that. And I was that sucked. And even still, some of the other current X-Men stuff, I really wanted to find a really good X-Men book. And I actually really like the all-new Wolverine.
That's a good one.
A surprise to me that it was, you know, Laura Kinney. And I did eventually finally watch Logan, the movie. And I think that run is great. I know it's going to be ending soon. And I've actually read everything that's available through Marvel Unlimited. So
awesome.
that book is outside of that. Some of the other X-Men ones, like Gold and Blue, and I tried to get into it. I was like, I just really couldn't do it. But everything I've read from a trade standpoint has been at least, like, I don't think anything I've been like, wow, this is, like, actively bad. You know, like, even where, you know, probably my most controversial opinions were around, like, Infinite Crisis. Yeah. And that was mainly around, okay, so the in quotes, like, official trade is 240 pages, but actually there's, like, I don't know what, like, 800 pages of backstory to it. Like, there's a lot of build to it. And when you go in – when I went into it, it felt like a fan service movie in a comic book that took a lot of liberties and just never hit with me. Like, I think it's a fair opinion, but then it's like, yeah, he probably would be more invested in, like, what Batman and these guys were doing, you know, if I had the 12 or whatever, however many, like, that mini arc was beforehand to even understand that. Because when you got into it, it really was like, it was like a big budget movie with a lot, like, everybody was in it because it was a whole DC universe thing. So that one, you know. Yeah. It didn't connect as high as others had rated it, I think. But I was able to at least see, like, where, like, my gaps were.
It might be a little like if you were to, say, watch Avengers Infinity War without having seen any of the prior Marvel films.
Yeah, I think, like, that's a great way to put it. Yeah.
It's like Infinity War looks great. Like, those trailers are amazing. But if you don't have the emotional investment in these characters going into it, you don't know what they've been up to that led to all this. You'll just be like, well, that was big and loud, and
right,
and I
right.
don't really understand why this character dying was such a big deal, or why this thing over here showing up means anything. I get it. Luckily for you and for many of us, Infinite Crisis is getting a new omnibus collection coming out later this year.
Everything
in a,
is that going to be
in what, like, is both a book and a weapon?
Oh yeah, I bet,
because this sucker's cool. Huge, and I want it. It's under $200 on Amazon right now, so pre-order that sumbitch. Get yourself an Infinite Crisis omnibus / doorstop.
Do they know?
I didn't. You know what? I'm curious now. I'm going to pull it up. I'm going to see if they've got an official page count listed on it. I'm sure they do. But I've got all those trades individually. And
yeah, they don't go on sale very often. Or they're actually not all digitalized yet either.
Yeah, they're not.
I think we talked about that. They're not all, right? They're not all collected digitally yet.
No, sadly, the collections are not. That is a source of frustration. Oh, this is going to make you happy. This sucker is 1,152 pages.
Ooh, I was going to say 1,200. So by Price is Right rules, you win. But I was pretty close. I thought, thinking more at it, like, it's my way. And if it's that big as you described, that's like 1,200 pages.
The Amazon release date is June 19th, and it is $150 right now.
Wow.
That price will probably drop a little bit too, because that's the list price for this book.
Oh, yeah, that will drop then.
It will be discounted a bit, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 34% as Amazon tends to go.
Huge. Now, this is a little bit of a naive question, but, like, so, like, it's all in color, right? And I asked that with the prefaces. You know how, like, some of the older omnibuses are huge and they're all black and white, like, they just didn't color.
Yeah.
Have you seen this before? Like,
I have.
Comic shops? Yeah.
Yeah, the Marvel, like, classics, they'll do that because they can, if they don't have the color pages, they can print it way cheaper and sell it at a much cheaper rate. But yeah, you do lose something without the color pages there. Luckily, guys, Infinite Crisis Omnibus full color. I'm gonna wait
till that guy's like $10 on Comixology, so and I'm gonna get it.
I hope they digitize the Omnibus collections. I don't know if they. I mean, they do it for some things, but they don't do it for everything. Now, another collection that I would recommend coming up is they're collecting Justice League: The Dark Side War Saga, like the entire thing in an Omnibus collection.
Oh, that's interesting, because that was going to be one of my next questions to you, because I have I have that series digitally, and I have the companion, but I don't have, like, everything. I was going to be curious how to even read that. It can be tough with the companion piece.
This is actually already available, too. This came out, apparently. when did this come out? Oh, this came out in October of last year. Never mind. I'm sorry. It's 512 pages for about $46. So huge, huge collections there. Very worth picking up, I would say. So yeah, I hope you give Infinite Crisis another shot. If you get that Omnibus collection, I think you'll be like, yep, this is it's going to be a time investment for you, but I think it'll be time well spent. And yeah. It's yeah. One that I'm going to reread. As soon as that Omnibus collection comes out, I'm going to buy it, and I'm going to sell the trades that I have. I have all of the stuff that led up to Infinite Crisis in trade format, including, you know, the event itself. But I'd kind of like to just sell that off and get the Omnibus collection because they look better on a shelf.
One barrier I have a little bit there too is like the Infinite Earths idea and the way that you can use that to like hand wave stories. Like, okay, and if you would not like to be spoiled on Under the Red Hood, then you want to pause and fast forward like a minute right now. But like that was like the one really weak part to me. Was like, oh, wait a minute, that Superboy that I read a bit before, like him punching whatever, like sent this. I'm like, give me a break. Like, you get so invested and excited. Like, how are they going to solve this and write it? Yeah, and like, look, I get that that's a trip. You got to be kidding me. This motherfucker's back again? Like, and he's punching a wall, and that's going to change my story? Like, just a cherry on top
Yeah, it's like Superboy Prime punches up.
Superboy Prime. He's a cool character and all, but you got to be kidding me with that bullshit.
That was a weird thing that they did, and I was very glad that the movie version of Under the Red Hood does not use that. It, in fact, just has Ra's al Ghul bring Jason Todd back to life.
Oh, interesting.
So that's the
– Oh, okay. Yeah, I like that story better.
That's the
change. I know you really like that. You really like that version of that. I'm going to try to watch that.
That's officially canon now too.
Really?
Yeah, the way Red Hood was – or the way Jason Todd was brought back to life, officially recognized by DC Comics canon, is that Ra's al Ghul brought him back to life using a Lazarus Pit.
Okay. Well, that runs a little bit better then. I like that. That's cool. I try to – you know how CW has like some of those online streaming?
Yes.
Like on CW Seed, which is a bad name for a service. And what's even worse – is like literally like every 4 minutes, there's 3 minutes of CW commercials. I couldn't do it. I tried to watch New Frontier on it, and I was like,
You gave up.
Really is like not enjoyable to be stopped with 3 minutes of non-fast-forwardable commercials every 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'm glad
for the same shows. So,
and I'm glad that the main CW app doesn't do that. Like, it actually puts the commercial breaks in where they actually go.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. Hey, make your money. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm not looking for things for free. But that was just like way over the top. On the viewer,
it really is. That's why I've not really used Seed all that much because I find it to be a frustrating app. And but Red Hood is one of the Under the Red Hood is one of those that is well worth owning because I watch that movie periodically from time to time, and it never gets old. Just a tremendous Batman movie, a great adaptation. And I'm glad you brought that one up because it reminded me of New Frontier because it has an animated movie adaptation too. And you were just mentioning that one. That one's worth owning.
Okay.
And funnily enough, Neil Patrick Harris is in both of them.
Yes, I did see that. There was quite the cast for the New Frontier.
Yep.
That I saw.
Neil Patrick Harris plays Barry Allen and the Flash in that one. And in Under the Red Hood, he plays Dick Grayson Nightwing.
Okay.
So that's tremendous animated movies there. But anyway, we've talked about the comics that didn't really hit for you. I remember I was talking about Infinite Crisis before. I was sad that one didn't hit with you, but I'm hoping that in an omnibus version it might do better. Because I actually consider that to be the best event of DC's history.
That's high praise. So yeah,
it is, but the reason it is because it pays off so many emotional beats and so many stories that came before it. And if you're not familiar with those, or if you haven't read those, then it probably doesn't hit quite as well. So yeah, I get where you're coming from there. I'm like, yeah, that one is a more long form emotional investment. So if you haven't done that, then it might not work out quite as well as it does in my head.
Right.
Now, another one that I wanted to ask you though was there a book that you picked up off of one of our recommendations, any of us, and you thought, I don't know about this, but then you read it, you were like, oh wow, that actually was good.
Yeah, let me think about that one. So, I mean, Rebirth is one that we talked about before. Let me find another example here with that, because Rebirth is probably the main one to that. And then let me think. You know what? I would say probably the Teen Titans, maybe by Jeff Johns. His run on the Teen Titans was one that I kind of jumped in blind. If you would have asked me, like, who are the Teen Titans, I would have said, I don't know. So that's how blind I was going into it. I know who Nightwing is, and he's actually not really in Jeff Johns' version of it. He's graduated. So, I didn't know who they were. I mean, it's Cyborg, you know, who he's a pretty big character in DC. But so reading that one, actually, I thought that was a really good introduction into them. The story's a little bit in the wizardy, weird, culty type, multi-dimensional raven monster type thing, but you know, but it happens, I'm sure, in California. So, but that one I liked though, and I actually was excited because I know you had said that they're gonna the second volume of his work is going to be out digital soon, and so it's important for listeners to kind of get to. This is a big learning for me, is that as we've kind of hinted on, is that even though these are like what that's like 15 years old. 13 years old, like mid-2000s, right?
Yeah.
Run for him?
His Teen Titans run should be a teenager itself by now.
Right. So the volume 2 of it isn't even digitally on Comixology yet. So that's where Russell's talking about, like, new stuff is coming up all the time. It's not just what came out last week. Like, literally, this shit's like 13 years old and it's not out there. So when they do come out, I think it's really cool that, you know, as a comics fan, that you're like, you're getting newer even – you're getting cool stuff from before also, in addition to whatever new that's coming out.
Yeah, and it's really awesome that you've gotten into like all this like DC and Marvel stuff, because that's
– Make you pick. I'll tell you. No.
That is where we steered you, because truth be told, you were asking all the right questions. You were asking us, you know, what have you guys read? Where would you start us? And you kind of gave us an opportunity that Greg, Nick, myself, we haven't really gotten a lot of. Todd as well. We haven't really had the opportunity to just talk to somebody who is genuinely interested in getting back in and steering them towards stuff that we love, that we genuinely adore, and that even got us back into comics. So it's been fun to kind of steer this person back into into a proper direction and to see what the results are going to be. Cause I think that was my biggest concern, was what's the result of this going to be? Is he, you know, cause everybody's taste is subjective. You may pick up something that each of us was like, this is absolutely amazing. You'll read it and be like, well, that sucked. That was pure trash. Cause that happens. And, that we haven't steered you wrong yet has been kind of a feel-good moment for me, at least. So I do have to ask, though, have you ventured outside of Marvel and DC at all? Have you tried out any Image books? Are you curious about any of that?
You know, I have not, and that's a great question. I know that you're pretty big in the Valiant, right?
I was for a while. I think I just kind of fell out of it because of the financial investment that has to be made, but I do keep finding the digital sales on Comixology, like whenever they put out trade collections.
Okay.
I'll pick those up, and unfortunately they usually just sit in my library. I haven't actually gotten around to,
well, you know, I would, you know, next time they do a good sale on that, I would certainly take a wreck, and I would take a dive outside and report back on that. I would be happy to do something like that. That would be fun. I know that when I was a teenager and looking at those two like Valiant and Image, and even when they teamed up, you know. And I saw that Exo Manowar is still around. I thought,
yes,
I think he was on a break, but he came back. You know, I remember that name, and that back then, like, you would read those because you were looking for like some kind of spark, which is weird because sometimes we watch wrestling like that where we feel like the WWE is so like static and just vanilla that you're like, oh, maybe this Image book will be like this great thing. And the drawing was always fantastic. Well, I'm not sure if this, but I think the main thing, the biggest hurdle is the characters, right? You know who, yeah, Wolverine is, you know, Batman, and it's so hard to be able to come into that and buy into this other alien that's in the Image universe, you know? So yeah, it's hard for writers, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and Valiant is one of those that I do have a deep love for, and I would highly recommend the Harbinger series, especially Joshua Dysart's run on it. He really made me a fan of that book. I was on that book for quite a while with him, and the other book's pretty good stuff. Bloodshot and Exo Man of War, both of those. Actually, Robert Venditti, who's currently writing Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps, he was the guy who relaunched Exo for Valiant back whenever they first jumped back into all this. Matt Kent is currently the guy on Exo Man of War. But that's an interesting story. It is a good one, but I very much preferred Harbinger. As I was reading that, I was like, man, this is what I wish X-Men comics were like right now. Because I could just get so into it. But
yeah, and you become wistful for that in a little bit too, right? You find
it tickled all my nostalgia buttons of like what X-Men comics used to be like. And I was like, man, this is what it should be like. Give this guy X-Men. I bet he'd turn it around. And
right.
I mean, I don't know that. I mean, he'd have to go through Marvel editorial first. Good luck, right. Good luck, right, buddy. But over on Image, I do hope that you want to try out some of that stuff eventually, because I got a whole host of recommendations there that luckily aren't, and none of them are superheroes. Like, not a single one. It's all independent, creator-owned type stuff. Very different types of stories and books that I have gotten like very deep into. And
interesting. Okay.
And Image doesn't really, I mean, they have a couple of superhero books, but for the most part, they've gone like creator owned. Somebody will pitch an idea, and if they dig it, they'll say, all right, we'll publish that. We'll put it out. And little to none of that has been any kind of superhero story. It's very much, like my favorite current book on the shelf of all comics is Southern Bastards by Jason Aaron and Jason Latour. And that is a crime drama set in the backdrop of a small Alabama, like a very small Alabama town, using the political world of high school football.
Okay, interesting, yeah.
And it's it is absolutely amazing, because as I'm reading it, I'm like, this is almost too real. I mean, there's, like, in the first volume, there's like one moment where I was like, all right, well, that was a little over the top, but I stuck with it and ran with it, and the rest of it has been like, man, you forget sometimes that some of these guys who write for like major comic companies came from the same area that I did. But Jason Aaron is from Alabama. Jason Latour is from North Carolina. So they grew up in this football culture. So they get it. They understand this small town mentality and where it comes from. They may live, you know, in like California and New York these days, but they aren't that far removed from where they came from. They remember, and they came up with a killer story for it. So that would be one, if you want a taste of some of the most awful sides of Southern culture. There it is. But let's see. We've talked about stories that you enjoyed more. I'm glad that you enjoy Teen Titans. That's actually a run that I'm only just really getting started with myself. Now, let's get to some basic questions here as
sure.
as we're wrapping this up. Some stuff that maybe we should have covered at the beginning, but we'll cover it now. Do you have any favorite comic characters, and have you found any new favorites now that you've gotten back into reading regularly?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? Because you don't want to hit the super clear popular guys, right? Like, you know, so Batman was something that was comfortable for me. You know, the animated series, reading some of the comic books growing up.
Sure.
You know, enjoying the movies and the whole mythos with it. You know, we're always all familiar with Batman, so he was probably from a volume standpoint I've read the most from there, including Snyder's run in the New 52 with the Court of Owls story and stuff, which is really good, and then Hush and Under the Red Hood and then this year, my biggest accomplishment this year is reading all 630 pages of Nightfall, which is why maybe that omnibus would work, because when I'm done the other two groups of that, that's like 1,800 pages. So I have not started the second one yet. One of my buddies here locally, he was like, hey, FYI, the second book of that is awful. So good luck getting through it. So
it is a bit rough.
Right.
It's not the best part to me. I mean, the best part was the first part, but I rather like the third book. So I hope you will too.
So maybe there's some – I thought that the – and I'll get back to the question. I thought the first book did a real job of not solving everything while not – I thought, you know, in looking back in hindsight reading it, I was like, you know, they did a really nice job of drawing this out without it being like right at the point when it was like, wow, this is really getting old. You know, like they were very – I thought, you know, clearly they put a lot of work into it, and it hit me in the right places with that, with a lot of still like stuff to come where I can see like – long form, like where this movie's going. But let's see. So other characters here that I'm kind of interested in now. Let me think of some big names. That's a good question. You know, I think with all new Wolverine and Gabby and Laura Kinney, I thought that relationship was really cool too. And I like that a good bit. I thought that was pretty funny, one that I would keep reading. And then I just finished the Black Panther A Nation Under Our Feet run. I did the whole 12 run, which is actually, you know, now we can rant about Marvel trades. And so that's actually technically three Marvel trades, where it would really only be one DC trade, and DC would have lots of extra pictures and drawings and notes. And let me tell you what, folks, like they do a bang up job of actually like presenting a trade where you feel like, you know how nowadays, like, it's like, oh, you know, CDs don't sell, but if we sold the CD with all this extra stuff, like, it would, you know, it would, there's a niche market for that.
Yeah.
And so, like, same thing with DC trades. Like, they make it, it's more than what you read, you know. You get to read Geoff Johns' like, liner notes and stuff, and, like, I'd imagine that's very ideal, you know, to people that are big fans of his.
Yes.
So, DC does a really good job with that kind of stuff. And I forgot where I was going with it. I got on that whole rant. What was I jumping back to with it? Black Panther. So, but I really liked, I had never read anything, knew nothing about the character other than he showed up in Civil War, which is another bad Marvel movie. That's a bad take. I know people are going to be, I did not like that. I did not think
man.
That movie was good. I was falling asleep towards the end of it. And maybe it was just my energy level, but I was like, this is not particularly good either. But he was fine. And I liked that one. I thought he was a good character. I thought it was really refreshing to like to have a superhero and a leader that was like humble enough to recognize his mistakes and like reconcile with his enemies to be able to find a common ground. Because like in the real world, like that's what you do to get through work and to move through and to problem solve. And as a problem solver, it was like really refreshing to see like that. Yes, there was violence, and yes, there was cool team-ups in there, you know, with Luke Cage for an episode, an issue. But, like, ultimately, like, this was, like, a political story, which I thought was pretty neat.
Yeah. All that's good stuff, and I feel like maybe Greg or Tim threw something at their computer or at their phone just now for you not liking Civil War.
So the movie or the whole the story? The movie, like, I haven't read the
movie.
The movie.
Now, If you were talking about the comic book story, I'd be totally with you because I find that story to be tedious and to be one of the most overrated things in the history.
Yeah,
of
well, that was one of my things too. With I was reading Spider-Man, where I think it worked into Civil War II. That was the thing with Captain Marvel, right? Civil War II.
Yeah,
like
tedious.
So bad. I actually stopped reading that series then too. It was not good.
Cannot blame you there. Most Marvel events are pretty tough these days. Even when they start out really well, they usually don't end all that well. But I'll give one of them credit though. Actually, Jonathan Hickman did another Secret Wars event. What year was it? Either 2015 or 2016, whenever this happened. And it was the culmination of his Avengers and New Avengers run because he was writing both books at the same time. And it built up to this big Secret Wars event that he did with Esad Ribic drawing the book. And my God, it was gorgeous. But that event actually really hit for me. It was a page turner. I was enthralled from beginning to end. And I hadn't liked a Marvel event in years. But
yeah, one of mine was Original Sin. Right. That was actually one of the first things I read on Unlimited, who did not only, and that was another one again too. So sprawling. Like ridiculous when it came to, like, if you really wanted to read every part of it, no thank you. But they did do a good job of, like, clearly marking, like, okay, here's this Thor and Loki, like, 5-issue offshoot. Cool. Got it. Hulk, Iron Man. Here's this, you know, this Original Sin. This is what, you know, Iron Man did, and it ended up, you know, costing Bruce Banner. Awesome little offshoot story. Good. I thought that event was really good. And that was a pretty pivotal one because that's the first thing I read on Marvel Unlimited based totally on a long shot of, like, it must have been, like, new that month to Unlimited. So it's like you see, like, that number one and you're like, okay, I'll read it. You know, and like, boy, glad that was good because I was kind of like, wow, this is a good story, and I really liked it. And that was Jason Aaron, who is, you know, he's very good too. So he did a really good job there, and so he that was actually a really pivotal one for me when I got back into it. Where first off, I kind of found it on my own and read through it, and even from there, like I read that spawned out of that because I think they did like a number one of him like right after it, and. And I read a bunch of those, and like I said, then Spider-Man and some other X-Men stuff in there with that. So I thought that was a pretty good Marvel event. But I will retry Civil War. I guess at the end, I don't know. Maybe it wasn't that good. Maybe it was. I remember I asked the question because I'm like, how did he know his parents were like whatever? And there's like, oh, it was kind of foreshadowed in like Blacks. I hadn't watched Winter Soldier yet. So maybe that was part of the problem. I did watch Winter Soldier since then.
Yeah. So. Winter Soldier is still my favorite MCU film. And Civil War is a pretty good follow up to it, though I think it's not quite as good as Winter Soldier. But. Yeah, give the movie another shot. Don't bother with the comic.
Watching out of order probably wasn't the best. But I'll tell you what, maybe a sneaky favorite was interesting enough, it was, I think the same day or maybe the day after you got your 4K Thor Ragnarok. I actually rented that, and I thought that was fantastic. I thought that was easily one of the best Marvel ones. God. Obviously, the second Thor was like the worst one. Everybody knows that. I don't even need to be a film connoisseur to be like, wow, that sucked. So I like Ragnarok was pretty damn good. So
yeah, that's a fun movie, one that I will probably never get tired of watching, but
because it's so different, right? It's against the formula. Everything with this Marvel one's like, look, I don't mean to beat on like Doctor Strange and that, but like they get a little formulaic, right? The Marvel cinematic universe, and that's boring to me.
The ones that kind of bucked the formulaic trend lately. Like, Doctor Strange was very formulaic, but then you get Spider-Man Homecoming and you get Thor Ragnarok and then you got Black Panther and they kind of bucked the trend or bucked the formula. And it's like, okay, this feels good. This is refreshing. This is giving me a little hope for the future of the MCU.
You know, and to be fair to Doctor Strange, I like the origin story. I didn't know it. I thought this was cool. So, like, I liked the first half of the film, but I just couldn't care what happened after that. Like, I assume he beat the bad guy through some magical portal wand thing and whatever. Like, nothing, like, it didn't, it no stakes to me, but I did like the idea of his origin and how that all came about. So I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, there's some fun stuff at the end of that movie, a really inventive way of defeating the final villain. But it's set up for its sequel. I think the Doctor Strange sequel will be far superior to what they did in the first film, mostly because of where they leave it after that first post-credit scene. It's like, yep, now we're cooking. But it's just that, you know, getting there thing with a movie that was basically the same movie as Iron Man, but with magic.
Right, exactly. That's a good point.
But I have that same criticism of Ant-Man. So
never saw that one. No interest in that one. That's where I kind of ask you, like, when do we hit, like when do we hit too much and they start to not make money anymore? And I thought it would be, maybe it'll be Ant-Man and Wasp. I'm going to be honest with you. It seems like a far fetched, but you don't know. It could be written really well, and you're going to have your diehards that are going to go see them because they put out only a handful a year, you know, right? And it's only $15 or $12, whatever it is. So you're not asking a lot of people to, like, just, on what they're invested in already.
I'll be honest. I actually think that Ant-Man and Wasp looks better than the first movie.
That's good. Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, well, you got me hooked on that first trailer. I thought that was good. Of course, Infinity War is the one I'm looking forward to most.
Sure.
Because that's mind-blowing so far. Now I don't think we've reached that point where people are going to stop going to see him. I think it's going to take something else to break the back of this juggernaut.
But let me ask you then though, what about TV shows, right? Like, I see reports like, oh, these Image characters are in, they're going to bring them to TV. I think that's got to be another thing where, like, they're really, look, you throw what you can at the wall and you cancel it or whatever. But some of those, I feel like, is this going to stick? I mean, you guys do a good job of, and I don't watch the CW shows, and that is no indictment of the shows. I just don't have the time. I'm sure they're good. We used to watch, like when Green Arrow was on, with Superman and Smallville, all that stuff, kind of the precursors to this really cool CW run. Where does that, like, kind of like, wow, we've hit the point where this all diminishing returns from here, and these just stink, and then they kind of lose favor.
It's hard to say. I think that,
I mean, Inhumans is pretty awful from the one episode I tried to watch.
Inhumans,
and that was on ABC.
Inhumans was a special type of bad, and it was almost like it was engineered to fail, just for the sake of doing it. Almost like some. There's a lot of backstory to that one. I would love for somebody to make like a documentary or a tell-all about that, because I think that would be an incredibly interesting story to hear about the behind-the-scenes stuff of why Inhumans was so terrible. But that's a special case. I don't think that that's anything close to what the norm will be for any of these shows ever. And some of these shows are going to fall out of favor. I mean, just like every TV show, like you're only going to go for so long. You're not set up forever. Like when it comes to Arrow, they had a 5-year plan because there were 5 years of flashbacks planned for this movie, because that's the format of the show. Like, it's telling a parallel story from the past that runs in conjunction with the present day stuff. And it's meant to be like, okay, well, time is a flat circle idea that history repeats itself in a lot of ways. It's like, okay, well, now you have an opportunity to not make the same mistakes twice. So that's how Arrow was set up in its first 5 seasons, and they reached the end of that. So now it's kind of in uncharted territory. Season 6, I thought, this current season, I believe, is the 6th season of the show. And it's... I'm gonna call it hit and miss. There have been some really great stuff in it, but there's been some moments where I've been like, yeah,
Not now. What about the X-Men ones that Fox is churning out a whole bunch of different ones? There's one on FX. There's one that was on Fox.
I actually love both of those. I think Legion is one of the most inventive TV shows of the last 10 years, and you'd never know that it was an X-Men related show unless you were familiar with some deep dive X-Men characters. Otherwise, it's just like, this is a head trip, man. And it is some good shit. The Gifted is much more traditional X-Men stuff and is like Matt Nix, who is the showrunner and creator of that show. People will remember him from a little show on USA called Burn Notice.
It was a good show.
That was his show. And I did not know that he was such a big fan of that X-Men animated show, but it comes through in The Gifted.
Oh, does it? Okay, interesting.
Holy shit, does it. It's like he can't use those characters, of course, but he's using some deep dive X-Men characters and some actually pretty popular X-Men characters as well, some from the more modern era. And he has crafted a tremendous show. The first season is only 13 episodes. Every one of them is on Hulu right now. Watch that show. Tremendous. Okay. Love it. If you liked X-Men the Animated Series, no reason you shouldn't love this. Very well done.
Cool.
So that was my favorite new show of this past season was The Gifted.
All right, good to know.
So recommend both of those. Legion Season 2 is going to start up next month. And not sure where that show is streaming right now, but if you can find it somewhere, definitely watch Legion. That's incredibly good. As far as the CW shows go, my favorite one right now is Legends of Tomorrow. I love that silly little show. It's one of those that fools you into thinking that it's embracing of the cheese and the craziness of the DC universe, and then it sneaks the emotional connection into you. You don't even see it coming until it happens.
There you go.
And that's why I love Legends so much more than pretty much any of the other CW shows. Though I'm pretty emotionally invested in The Flash, so I'm still very much in that show, even whenever it hits a down or a weird moment. But I mean, I watch all of them. One that should definitely be mentioned is Black Lightning. Did not see that show coming. And you want to talk about a socially conscious and socially relevant show that just happens to be a superhero show too? Wow. It's like nothing else on TV right now. Black Lightning should be seen by all.
Now, I'm familiar with Black Bolt, but so I'll have to figure out what the DC Black Lightning. That's very close.
Black Lightning is an African-American led show, and as the name might suggest, he has electricity powers. But I like the angle they took on him, making him a retired superhero who comes out of retirement. And all this while he's trying to be a high school principal, and he's got two daughters, one who's in college and one who's still in high school. So he's...
It does sound pretty interesting.
And it has the best villain, or the best of the CW villains right now, a guy named Tobias Whale. I wasn't sure how I was going to like this guy at first, but oh man, is he a hit. Tobias Whale is a guy that I never thought I would say that about, but yep, big hit for me. So if you're going to check out one of the shows, get on Black Lightning as soon as you can. Luckily, all these CW shows hit Netflix 8 days after their season finale. So if you want to binge them, you can just do that.
Yeah, that is cool. Yeah, it's a little bit more accessible for me. That's cool.
But to wrap all this up, one last thing. If you could tell a new or a lapsed reader anything about getting into or back into comics, what would it be? What would be your the one piece of advice you'd give any of them?
Yeah, I would say that you know, it's never been more accessible. It's a, you know, you're reading at your own pace. You can read it on any device. I use my iPhone. I don't even use an iPad to read them. I use my phone. I use the, you know, I know this sounds like rudimentary in the sense of, like, you know, all these apps have these, you know, built-in customized, you know, viewers where they go pane to pane and then maybe scale out so you see the whole page to see all the great art, you know, if there's little pictures within pictures and whatnot. And, you know, reading a comic book like that is, it's easy to read, right? And you, and I don't think you lose much from that. And that, but that, to be fair, I don't really have too much of a physical reading background to be able to compare it to yet. You know, there's certainly something to holding a book, but I think that kind of going through and reading the panes at how they, you know, what it's easy to read along and follow. So it's easy to jump in. And, you know, this stuff is, there's sales running all the time. You can find the character you're interested in, and you can cherry pick like me, and then you find the best stuff and go like, wow, this is why people are really passionate about this hobby. And, you know, it's really fun to follow smart people. You know, that's one of the things we do with Place to Be Nation and Place to Be Nation Pop is we create something where, like, people that are very passionate and very knowledgeable and have great charisma and chemistry can talk about these things that they're really passionate about. And that's a very powerful message and something that people can really get invested in. So it's I encourage you to follow along and certainly listen to all the different shows that we have with it as a supplement, as you guys do a tremendous job.
Well, we do what we can, and we appreciate you guys indulging us in these crazy hobby and ideas that we've brought forth. So it's a big thanks to all of you guys at Place to Be Nation for allowing this to exist. So we're happy to be here, and we'll be here as long as you'll let us. So
yeah, I'm like that one. I'm like the VP that keeps it hidden away from, well, obviously the books are all mine anyway, but I, you know, it makes, so I guess keep it on the books and just hit, you know, certainly hands-on in the sense that I'm, you know, scheduling and whatnot, but kind of let it do its thing. You sing, curse, whatever you want to do, you know, is kind of,
yeah, we've,
it's just kind of there.
We've certainly...
If one thing isn't for you, you just skip and delete. There's plenty of stuff out there. You know, we there's a ton of content every week. So
yeah, and that's what we try to do. We try to keep a diverse lineup. We try to make sure that we're hitting all the angles and trying to, you know, keep it fun above all else. We want people to have a good time listening, and we want you guys to listen to all the shows on Place to Be Nation Pop. We want you guys to listen to all the shows on Place to Be Nation. So before we get out of here, Brad, what have you got going on in the podcast world, and where can people find you on the old social media channels?
Well, on the podcast world, I'm going to be honest with you. Even though the pop feed is technically mine, I've actually only made a scant few appearances, mainly with video games and board games on here. And I'm trying to think of maybe some rank and files that I did. I don't even know if I was on that. I'm taking credit for a show that I wasn't on, but I listened to it. So I haven't been too much audio wise with life and work and whatnot. So I actually don't have a show right now, but I like to manage the shows and of course the site. So but you can find me on Twitter at Brad 21126, which is a lot of numbers, and I apologize. But you can find me out there, pretty active on there, and I enjoy seeing it. One of the nice things is having a really smart comics crew is they just retweet all the good stuff onto my timeline, and then I let, you know, I see it. So I just, you know, I've got your stuff out there, Russell. You're usually bringing in all the good stuff, and then in social media too, as I'm in, as you mentioned, the you can follow along on our private Facebook group pages. I do post in there to myself, and you guys are nice enough to indulge me when I ask questions and whatnot. And kind of, I found that, you know, I really enjoy going through it when I'm posting my immediate thoughts, just like you would do if you watched a wrestling show or a wrestling match, you know, and I like to try to get those down on paper right away. And it kind of keeps you up to task too, because you're like, what am I reading? I'm going to keep throwing that out there to people. And that kind of keeps you going through too. So, yeah, that's where you can find me. And, you know, we appreciate you clicking through on placetobenation.com and, you know, the articles and everything that you do there and with the Amazon stuff. It all goes towards, you know, we're a nonprofit, and it all goes towards paying for that pop feed. You know, our creators don't have to put anything into this. They already put in way too much with their time and their energy. So we appreciate everybody's support. It does go to paying those bills.
Well, we do what we can. Of course, you can find me on Twitter at Russell_Sellers. And definitely join the Place to Be Nation Pop Comics Facebook group. It's open to everybody. We'll let you in. You can talk all the fun comics with us. And you can find the archive of Brad's year-long thread where he has talked about all these different books that he's read. He's rated a few of them. He's gotten suggestions from us. It's just a great place to come and talk shop. And that's what we've been doing here through this entire show. We hope you guys have enjoyed listening to us. And in the near future, hopefully I'll be back in about a month, coming up probably near the end of April. We're going to hit episode, I think it's going to be about episode 40, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not entirely sure about that. I have to. I've kept a count of how many. Actually, this is episode 39, so the next episode will be episode 40.
Okay.
So
we don't number with Sellers Points. I like that, right?
We don't.
There's no pressure.
Just look for
the topic you're interested in, right? Yeah, so
pretty much, it's just been by topic more so than anything else. But I have kept a count of how many episodes I've been on, and it's been. It'll be 40 episodes coming up in the next one, and the next one's going to be kind of a big episode, because when it drops, we'll have had another issue of Doomsday Clock, and we will have Action Comics 1000 will be out. And what we're going to do is we're going to do a big crossover episode with the longest-running weekly episodic comic book podcast in all of Place to Be Nation. That's right. Both of the hard-traveling fanboys, Greg Phillips and Nick Duke, will be on the show at the same time to discuss Doomsday Clock and to discuss, of course, Brian Michael Bendis' debut on Superman with Action Comics 1000. We will also be joined by a special first-timer guest, a good friend of ours from a different comics group, Mr. Joe Johnson, will be on the program for the very first time. So this going to be a big one, folks. We're going to have whole lots of fun to talk about. Brian Bendis is at DC. Of course, it'll be under the current events banner that we've established here on the Sellers Point Show. And before I get out of here, again, special thanks to Brad for joining me on this edition to talk a little shop and talk about his journey into comics. And with that, thank you guys for joining us. We hope we'll see you again on the next show. And with that, we are out of here.